Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle, whatever it may be, they'll do everything they can to make sure, A, you're fully insured, and B, that they save you money at every turn. That's what customer service is all about. And a happy Thanksgiving from the great people of Purdy Insurance to each and every one of you. All right. And now we will turn our attention to the outstanding Nate Bauer, who now joins us online. And Nate, to you and your wonderful family and to your golf clubs, happy Thanksgiving.
You brought that up. It made me sad. I put them away. They're in the house. They're out of the trunk.
The family or the golf clubs?
Whoa. The old clubs. I got three rounds in last week. It felt a nice send-off to the season.
That's very, very nice. Very nice. Because, you know, Jack and I drove over to the game on Saturday, and he looked, he says, are you putting those bad boys away? Because they were still in the back of my car. And I said, yeah, he says, I got to give up the ghost. I says, you know, I haven't played since sometime in October, so yeah.
There's a Florida trip ahead of me this winter that I have to look forward to. But other than that, we've got a lot of 30-degree days coming here.
Yeah, no question. Okay, so let's get to the press conference. Well, I want to get to the game first. You and I, of course, followed intently every game of the Jalen Pickett era here at Penn State. And sure. I said earlier that when I talked to national announcers, they'd come over to shoot around and say, hey, you know, because they don't know him. Right? And I said, what is it about Pickett? And I said, he has the ability in the first 5 minutes of a game to read the room. What's working? What isn't? And I felt, in a football sense on Saturday, I felt like Penn State football and their staff read the room, and that's why we saw the attack we did in the second half. Am I off base there? Is there a different perspective?
No, I think that's right. I think there's a certain element of Rutgers being what you think they are, right? I mean, that is not an offensive really going to confuse you, but also you have to stop them, right? There's still that element of you need to win those matchups. And then defensively, yeah, look, I maybe I'm the one reading into things too much, but I see some, or saw what felt to me like some very distinct differences this past week against what had happened the previous 10 weeks. And, you know, certainly we're talking about an offensive coordinator change in between there, but it may feel small using Bo Prabula in the first half, right? Even for a snap, just to give a different look, integrating him into the game earlier. I believe, we won't know based on how things played out with Drew, but I think that Bo Prabula would have appeared in the second half just as well, with or without Drew getting dinged up. Usage of the tight ends, right? Just some of the things that they were trying to do looked, felt different offensively. And then, obviously, in the second half, once Drew went down, look, there's a real hindsight conversation to have, I feel, about this season for Penn State based on what Bo brings to the offense. not a conversation about Drew not being the starter, like nothing along those lines. But the notion that Bo does something to defenses that Drew can't, that would have helped Drew, would have helped the running backs, would have helped the receivers, I think there's a legitimacy to that. That is going to be interesting to see, you know, how they explore that this week with Drew expected to be back.
What kind of peril does Bo as a quarterback in the running game create because you're not sure which guy has the ball based on how he plays and how the running backs play?
I asked Keaton Ellis after the game, and it sounded like a flippant question. It wasn't intended to be, but I asked Keaton Ellis, I said, hey, can Bo throw? Can he do that, right? And he laughed, and he said, yeah, of course, he's a quarterback. But then Keaton got into what I was hoping he would get into, which is how he challenges defenses, meaning you literally just need an extra hat in there. You got to have an extra guy with an extra gap to be accountable for. And that is a significant difference to me. Like the underlying story here is 6 explosive runs in the second half. Penn State has not had 6 explosive runs for games since UMass. Had not had 6.5 all season. Okay? So his presence changes the way Penn State can be dynamic in the running game for those two backs. That, to me, that's the thing. It's not about Bo. Yes, he does something with his legs that also helps you. He can rip off chunk plays, and he did so on Saturday. But to me, the real conversation or the meat of the conversation is, hey, when he's in the game, he creates an avenue for the running backs that Drew can't when they do read option.
All right, so they do get to this game against Michigan State on Friday night. This is an opportunity for a 10th win, an opportunity at a New Year's Six bowl game. Those are the opportunities. You're talking to fans all the time. Is it really all just Michigan and Ohio State, and there's no perspective after that? What is it?
It's complicated because I think when you get through the immediate gratification of the disappointment, right? No one will argue against the notion that Penn State wants to get over the top against those two teams. That is
course.
A huge piece of this.
No doubt.
Is the feeling is the, and it is a legitimate feeling that this is a program that has had undeniable success. Okay. Under James Franklin, we're looking at the potential here for 5 of the past 8 years having double digit wins. I don't care what you say about the strength of the Big Ten. I don't care what you say about the non-conference schedule. That is an accomplishment. And if you're being honest with yourself, you wipe out the COVID year, that's 5 out of 7. That is tremendous in terms of success. Yes. However, the feeling of plateau, of having hit a place and not making strides beyond it, as remarkable as that success is, and consistent as that success is, people want to win a championship. They want to get to the playoffs. James Franklin wants to get to the playoffs. these are absolutely worthy aspirations for the program. And so this year, depending on what happens on Friday, if they get to 10-2, will end up feeling for a lot of people like a disappointment. Is it dejection? I think that will taper off, to be honest with you. I think over the offseason, and a lot of it, this is super interesting to me, is the draw of the bowl game. Right? Who do you get in the bowl? If you get Alabama and lose to Alabama, your season means that you didn't beat anyone good, right? You had three chances to beat someone good. That, in terms of what, how people would perceive that. If you beat Alabama or get a team of that caliber in the bowl and win that game, it to me, I think, transforms opinions. It totally changes how people look at the Big Ten next year, right? It welcoming Oregon and some of those teams from the West Coast. It changes all of that. But to a similar vein, if you draw Tulane in a bowl, it won't matter what you do. Right? Like, right. I mean, people's perceptions will be completely dictated by what the game is, who you're playing, and what the outcome of that game is.
Yeah. What was the general feel that you got out of the press conference with James?
Yeah, look, I mean, and it was interesting because it kind of got brought to a head, right, is that he left breadcrumbs as to why Mike Yurcich is no longer the offensive coordinator at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it throughout. He did it throughout the press conference. There were dots to connect. And at some point, he was asked, hey, are we connecting these dots correctly? Does this mean that you were if you were happy with the collaboration, if you were happy with the fact that the playbook was whittled down and more concise, if you were happy with those things, does that mean you were unhappy with the prior arrangement? And look, this is just the way that he is, and I don't blame him for it in a public position. I think he wants to be able to leave those breadcrumbs and have people read between the lines. I know for a fact that he doesn't want to have to come out and say it explicitly.
Right.
So when he was asked that, he said, look, if you're asking me in a way that only creates an opportunity for me to say things in a divisive way, he's not going to do it. So the end result is, look, all of this is messy. All of this is complicated. There is no singular event or singular reason why you make a change within your coaching staff. But if everyone is paying attention, and I think everybody is, particularly this week, mm-hmm. you're seeing, okay, what are the things that were different this week from last week? What is he saying about those differences? And what does that mean for how things were prior to that? And I think it completely opens the window. It's is it about Ohio State and Michigan and the past six performances under Mike Yurcich against those two teams? Absolutely. That is a huge piece of this puzzle. But there are other pieces around it saying, hey, what did he say, Steve? The way the script, right, having the play script for the game ahead of time, having the look offensively for the scout team. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's just a litany of things and that he felt had improved from the prior arrangement to this week. And, you know, I think it says a lot about what he wanted to do and where he's taking this.
Yeah, play scripts, cards, things like that you need for practice. Basketball will play Thanksgiving Day against Texas A&M. They're 4-0. They were expected to be 4-0. Texas A&M is 4-0. They were expected to be 4-0. The odd thing is when you know, I've obviously done the prep on the game, they're not shooting the ball well, Texas A&M. And Penn State's been okay at shooting it. So what do we find out of this tournament based on the level of competition? Because either way, they're going to play Butler or Florida Atlantic in Game 2 Friday.
Yep, we're going to find out a lot. We're going to find out a lot. I think that there are levels to that, right? But the first one to me is, do they belong on the same floor? Is this the caliber of Penn State team that we're talking about? I have reservations to that. I would guess that you do too. You know, in terms of the personnel that Penn State has, it is such a new collection in its entirety that it is difficult, even having played the competition that they have, to really get a full grasp and understanding of what it's going to look like against teams that are more capable than the opponents that they've played thus far. I don't think Lehigh's a joke, right?
No,
I don't think Lehigh's a bad team.
Right.
And you learn something about this Penn State team's makeup being in that situation of being in a tie game at half and coming out and doing the things that they did in the second half to win that game. You've learned things along the way, but there's just a lot of questions to answer. Is right Penn State's defensive full court press, the things that they were doing this past Friday against Morehead State, is that effective against Texas A&M? How much are they going to pull that out? I have no clue. I have no idea what the ability of opponents that Penn State will face this season is to break that press. Right? Do those teams have guards that can do it on their own, or do you have to be organized? Do you have to have that down? So it's going to be super interesting for me to see that. And then, look, I being honest about what I think this Penn State team is, we have seen enough evidence to say, you know what, Kanye Clary, Ace Baldwin can get to the rack when they want. They're going to do that this year. They will be met by different resistance in terms of the paint than they have seen thus far this season. And so it becomes incumbent on Zach Hicks, Leo O'Boyle, and Puff Johnson to knock down threes. Jameel Brown, right? For those guys, they play an inside-out game. Penn State, like, you can see this from a mile away, what they're going to do. It's just a matter of, okay, when you're playing these better opponents who are going to have better help defense, better perimeter defense, are your guys going to knock down those shots? They have got to do that, and it's going to be super interesting to see this weekend whether or not that's a component that's there yet or if that's something that's still to be developed.
Right, and that's exactly what we're about to find out, because they have based on the polls, Texas A&M's 13, Florida Atlantic's 10. Somebody asked me about Florida Atlantic today, so you don't realize, like, their top six guys, the five starters plus their six men, they're all back. I mean, nobody left.
And there's teams on the other side of the draw, regardless of what happens.
Oh, my goodness,
there's teams on the other side of the draw that are tough, too. They're going to get three high-quality looks at teams that might not play a Big Ten brand of basketball necessarily, but they're going to give you a very, very good litmus test as a program where you stack up right now.
Yeah, no question about it. Back to Penn State. Playing this game on a Friday, you've got Kalen, Kobe King, Cass Tech, you've got Jalen Reed, MLK, they're Detroit guys. They're playing a team that's won two of its last three games. What's your just general thought on the game Friday?
Yeah, well, look, it's the same that I had this past week, which is you have to win this game.
No doubt.
Everybody's so fixated. Look, Steve, during the game, the conversation about stunting Bo's development by not letting him pass the ball, right? That is literally a thought that people had, is, oh, they're just not letting him pass the ball. They had passes in there. there were designed passes.
Sure.
But there are POs, and Bo pulls it a lot. That's just something that he does. He takes the run option. It is about nothing else. Development, all of that other stuff is totally fine. It is a bonus if you can get it. This game is about winning the game, putting yourself in the top 12 for the CFP, and then going to a New Year's Six game and letting things fall out from there. So I very much felt as though the conversation after Michigan from externally, I'm not saying this is a reflection of what's happening internally, but externally, this notion that these games are just foregone conclusions, it is not. Not at all.
You gotta
win the game, period.
Yeah, that's... I tell my broadcasting class all the time, you start at zero, you prepare every game, no matter, regardless of what the opponent is, as to whether it will be a blowout, and you prepare every game as if it's going to go down to the last play, because you don't know what kind of game you're going to get.
Yep.
I thought that was good advice for them.
you have that sage wisdom. It's great. But it's true internally as well. This is a game that, yes, you are expected to win. Then they know that. However, doing it Thanksgiving week on a short week when nobody's on campus, right? Like, the human element of some of this stuff does come into play. And this is a grind at this point in the season. You are looking forward to that week after mm-hmm. the season ends where it's not bowl prep yet and you're just done for a little bit. So they got to get through this. If they play their brand of football, if the defense is the same guys that they've been, if the offense, you know, builds on last week and turns it into you know, something 2 weeks in a row, you got a great chance to win that game, and then you can worry about the rest from there.
My friend, I know you have a Zoom conference to get in on. You jumped in last minute. I always appreciate that. And in all sincerity, all kidding aside, happy Thanksgiving to you and that great family of yours.
Thank you so much, and the same to you. I look forward to seeing you soon. I won't be in Detroit, but I will catch you soon enough, I'm sure.
Sounds great. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Nate Bauer on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. Great to have him on the show, as always. Our show today brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle. You know what? They're outstanding. Because customer service means everything to them. And they want to make sure you're fully insured. And at the same time, they want to make sure they save you money. I mean, that's because it's all about you. Those are exactly the kind of people I want to be around. That's the kind of people that get my business. Yours as well. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. I did get a note from Delta today that as of right now, my flight from Orlando to Detroit is confirmed. I'm like, well, that's a really good thing. I needed it confirmed. In fact, I can check in if I want. I'm not going to right now, but I can. This has been the side conversation now for about a month and a half with Jack Ham. You're going to make that flight, right? You're going to make that flight. I said, Jack, I said, I'm coming in Thanksgiving. I'm not coming in Friday. He says, all right, good, good. So what he did was, he says, I'm moving dinner back to 7:30. I said, okay. Now what? Now we think the only thing that's open is going to be the hotel restaurant. Now, I realize that during the day, there will be restaurants that are open on Thanksgiving because we're staying near Ford Field and the Packers and Lions are playing at 12:30. But there's going to be a certain point where, game or no game, they're going to be closing up. Okay. And that's, you know, and that's what we think is, you know, will happen. So, you know, we'll eat in the restaurant. But he pushed back to 7:30 because there was actually an adjustment in my flight. And the adjustment is instead of landing at 6:32 or something like that, I get in at 6:20, which is really good. Okay. Like it. And the other adjustment was, I know what it was. And they adjusted my seat. Like, I could care less. I mean, they didn't adjust it to you're on standby. They just moved me from row 24 to row 32. All good. I'm in. That's great. All right. As long as it's there. And the next part, when I get down there, I'll have to arrange for a cab or an Uber to get me over to the airport when the Texas A&M game is over with. Then the other adjustment was instead of leaving at 10:30 on Saturday, they have us leaving at 10:15. Those are adjustments I don't mind. There are other adjustments where you sit back and go, really? But, and Penn State does not play Saturday. So Saturday is literally just a travel day to get back for Sunday's game. And, of course, I have no idea what time Sunday's game is. But, yeah. So, yeah, I got the email this morning. You're confirmed. Really? Good. It does tell me, though, that boarding closes at 3:25. So I better hustle you-know-what my backside to get through security and make sure I'm there. So I will do that. But that's been the running deal with Jack. Over the last month and a half, he goes, you're going to make that flight, right? You're going to make that flight, right? I said, well, I intend to. I said, there shouldn't be really any traffic on the roadway getting to the airport. And there really shouldn't be a lot of traffic inside the airport on Thanksgiving Day. And I deliberately picked, just so you know, I deliberately picked Delta. Why? Because Detroit is Delta's hub. So that was one of the reasons I picked that. So that'll be the drama of it. But yeah, we'll get down there tomorrow, leave late tomorrow afternoon, get down there. We'll do the show from Orlando on Wednesday. And then games Thursday, the travel. Then I'm in Detroit. And then depending on when the Penn State basketball game is, because it all depends on the winning and losing, they'll play either Florida Atlantic or Butler. The question is whether it's an 11 a.m. tip or it's a 2 o'clock tip. Okay? So we'll either be on an hour and a half following the game from Detroit, or we'll be on a half hour. So that's... but we're prepared for either scenario. How about Aaron Nola? This is the first big offseason move for anybody. And I know you got the Chiefs and Eagles tonight. But you're talking about a 7-year, $172 million deal. That is... tremendous. There are a lot of people who did not think, despite the loyalty between the two, that that they could re-sign him. Well, doggone, they not only re-signed him, they locked him in. 7 years, $172 million. And between Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, boy, I'm hard-pressed to think of better 1-2 punches at the front of a rotation than what the Phillies have. But that was... one of those, wow, how about that, moments. And I give the Phillies and their management a lot of credit. So what is 7 years, 172 work out to be an average of? It says 32, so it works out to be, what, $24 million a year when it's all said and done? It's not bad. It's not my $24 million. So that's why I don't worry about it. But then there's the Eagles and Chiefs tonight. This should be quite a game. Both teams are really good, and the Eagles are 8-1, the Chiefs are 7-2. Both teams are really good. The odd thing is In my personal opinion, level of play, neither happens to be as good as last year. I thought the Chiefs were absolutely better last year than what we're seeing this year. Now, part of it is, you know, Kelsey was out for a period of time. Yeah. And even despite he missed a couple of games, he still has 57 catches. Somebody explain to me how he gets open. Isn't he the number one guy in the scouting report? Goodness gracious. He's got to be the number one guy in the scouting report. Has to be. My goodness. But credit where credit's due. I mean, you gets it done. And the Eagles are playing really good football, but I don't feel like they're at the same level they were last year. Now, this year it's good enough. I mean, you know, yeah, they lost to the Jets, but they beat Miami. That was a tough game. They beat Washington. That somehow matches up with them. They held on and beat Dallas. It's all great. You have to explain to me how the Chiefs lost to Denver. I don't quite get that. But then when they did beat Denver, by the way, that game was a 19-8 game, so maybe it's like Washington. They just match up well with them. But these are two of the top teams in the league. I just feel like they're not each playing at the same level they were playing at a year ago to reach the Super Bowl. But at the same time, there's nobody playing better than either one of them. I think it's great Monday Night Football has it. I have cleared out everything. I am going to go to practice after the show today. I will freely admit I am doing with my daughter and son-in-law and grandchild, and by the way, one in the way, and then my son and his wife are coming in as well. I'm going to throw personally, even though I won't be here, a few Christmas touches around the area. I already did the outside. I'm going to do that internally here for about an hour or so after the show. Then I'll go to practice. And guess what? After that, after practice, it is dinner and this game. Nothing else. Everything else is done. I don't have to do anything else. I don't have to do anything else. I already have the basketball game for Thursday totally prepped. I already have the football game for Friday totally prepped. In fact, to be frank with you, I have already done the pregame show with James. That's done. I already sent it. And we had to do it because of it was my schedule that caused us to do it, which he was like, Steve, what do you need? Like, right. And we both know at this time of the year that happens. I had to do the same thing last year when I did the Charleston thing. And so all that's done. I already took care of it. You know, what's needed for this show, I took care of it. So tonight, feet up. Everything is cool, copacetic, and I'm just watching the Eagles and the Chiefs tonight. Right? Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and Lisa Salters are outstanding. Which will make the experience to me even better. And I know a lot of fans are excited about this game, and they should be. This has been one of those games you have circled for a long time, and I hope it meets the hype. I hope it's one of those games that goes into the fourth quarter. They're like, okay, let's see who's going to actually win this thing. And the last thing you want, now I know Eagles fans would love to blow them out, so I got that part. The last thing I wanted to see is like one team so dominant, you're like, jeez. And all of a sudden you get to halftime, like, all right, maybe I'll watch the first series of the second half just to see. But, So that's where we are. By the way, Manny Diaz, let's see here, has been named one of the semifinals for the Broyles Award, top assistant. Tommy Reese of Alabama, Adam Fuller, the defensive coordinator of Florida State. Tommy's the offensive coordinator at Alabama. Mike Bobo, the offensive coordinator at Georgia. Phil Parker, the defensive coordinator at Iowa. Bryant Haynes, who's the defensive coordinator at James Madison. Ron English, former head coach at Eastern Michigan. He is the Louisville defensive coordinator. Mike Denbrock, who's the offensive coordinator at LSU. Sharon Moore, offensive coordinator at Michigan. Kevin Peoples, the offensive line coach at Missouri. Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator at Ohio State. Will Stein, the offensive coordinator at Oregon. Remember, we had Jerry Allen on. We talked about Will Stein. Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinator at Texas. Danton Lynn, the former Nittany Lion. Danton Lynn, the defensive coordinator at UCLA. Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator at Washington. And Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator at Penn State. They are all the semifinalists for the Broyles Award. Great to see Manny on there, and great to see Danton Lynn on there. How about that? So that's the Broyles Award. So here we go. The other part, too, is when you look at Michigan State, one thing they have had injuries. And it turns out that Nick Samick, who's one of the keys to their offensive line, is out of the game Friday. Nathan Carter, their running back, and Brandon Wright, who plays a lot for them on the defensive front, are both iffy for the game on Friday. So that's where they are. Marlon Barnett told us him. He says he can now see the finish line to the season. Well, let's give credit where credit's due. They have won two of their last three games. Beat Nebraska at home. Tough, hard-fought game. Won it. Lost the game to Ohio State in Columbus. But then, down at halftime, rallied, and Hauser threw the 36-yard touchdown pass to Malik Carr, and they won the game. With minute six to go in the game? It's a 36-yard touchdown pass. And, you know, that's... So you just go from there. The whole key for Penn State, they can't worry about what Michigan State has or does not have. Just play your game. Play your game. And let's give Michigan State credit. They had 70. You're allowed to take 74 players on the trip. They only brought 50 scholarship players. So there you go. And let's give Harlan Barnett credit. He's done a great job. He really has. And Hauser, the redshirt freshman, is there, and he's going to be the guy because Sam Levitt, the true freshman, has been shut down for the season. Noah Kim is still out with an injury. Malik Carr has been really good. In fact, he's the one in the snow 2 years ago, had the 72-yard touchdown pass reception out there. He's still there. He's a transfer from Purdue. So, hey. I give Harlan Bennett and their staff a lot of credit for what they've done. They've been put in a hard and difficult situation, and they have done a great job of keeping those players motivated, winning a couple of games late in the season. Penn State can't worry about that. Penn State's got to just go into Ford Field, play its game, and get the job done. Get on that plane, come back with a 10th win. We'll come back with more in a moment. Wrap it up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, yesterday Jim Donovan, who announced the first game of the season for the Browns, finally returned from cancer treatment yesterday and made this call.
5 seconds to go. Here we go. Hewlett ready to put the ball back. Waiting. Snaps it back. Ball down. Hopkins into it. Flag down. Kick is up. And the kick is good! With 2 seconds left, there's a flag down. It looks like the Steelers were offside. 2 seconds left, and Dustin Hopkins puts the Browns ahead 13-10.
Offside.
You bet.
Defense is telling the
Browns. After the game, Kevin Stefanski, the coach of the Browns, gave Jim Donovan the game ball. Back with you tomorrow and then Wednesday from Orlando.
your home for news, AccuWeather, and sports. Celebrating 90 years of serving the Susquehanna Valley. We are WKOK Sunbury.